Again, In Re Interest of Victoria. You may proceed.
It pleases the court. My name is Matthew Kaler with Finley & Kaler Law Firm in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm here on behalf of Chris Cornell, the father of the minor children in this matter, who's appealing the termination of his parental rights. It would take nearly all my time in front of this court today to review the services that my client complied with, was successfully discharged from, was participating in fully at the time that his rights were terminated by the juvenile court. The record's clear that my client was in complete compliance with all the court orders, with the exception of a two-week period in 2013 when he was between therapists and was at disagreement about some reports made by the visitation worker. He was in complete compliance with all the court orders. And that includes services that my client found on his own, additional parenting classes, AA, Community Alliance, and he remained involved with those throughout the life of this case as well. The caseworker, Asia Grimm, also testified that my client asked her on a monthly basis what else he could do to try to reunify with his children and was never given any additional services to participate in. The ones he did that above and beyond the court order he found on his own. It's our contention that the most important decision in this case was when the previous caseworker, Tracy O'Connell, who eventually ended up being a supervisor for the final caseworker, made the decision in July 2013 that it was in the best interest to terminate the parental rights of my client and to shift the focus to termination as opposed to reunification. That's some 8 months before the termination was actually filed. That's before the second parenting assessment was referred or completed. It's before my client was given semi-supervised visits in September 2013. It's our contention that every action after that point, July 2013, was aimed towards the termination of my client's rights. This is not a case where it's a question of compliance with court orders or a question of bonding between my client and his children. There was uncontroverted testimony on both of those facts. My client was fully compliant with court orders, and my client was bonded. That's even from the case, including Ms. O'Connell, including visitation workers. There's no question of bond in this matter. The question is, was Mr. Cornell able to parent these children? And it's our opinion that the best tools to make that determination for the court were the parenting assessment, which is, by definition, that's what it's there for, is to determine whether or not someone's able to parent. And second of all, seeking input from the visitation workers, whose job it is to supervise that relationship and report to the court. Speaking first on the parenting assessment, the first parenting assessment was completed in 2011 by Dr. Fairbanks. Significantly, it found that my client was not a risk for causing child abuse or neglect at that time. There were no follow-up recommendations, or no follow-up evals recommended, I should say, at that point. In 2013, late 2013, September and October, my client was referred for another pairing assessment, completed the assessment, but Dr. Fairbanks was not able to make a complete prognosis on my client's parenting ability, testified that he was guarded, likely due to the fact the case had remained open for so long. There were some other stressors that had added to the difficulty to render an opinion at that time, and recommended a six-month follow-up eval with a number of services to be in place in the meantime, which my client complied with. There was never any referral for that follow-up eval. In fact, 6 months later is when the department not only filed to restrict visits once more to fully supervise, but also went through with the termination of parental rights along with the state of Nebraska. The only steps that were taken to set up that follow-up eval by the department were after Ms. O'Connell testified in June. This trial took place over several months, unfortunately, and part of the problem with that is that there was quite a break between the testimony of Ms. O'Connell and the follow-up caseworker, Ms. Grimm, 4 months. And it was after O'Connell testified, but before Ms. Grimm testified in October, that there were phone calls and emails to counsel asking about a follow-up eval being scheduled, which would, again, be several months after it was recommended by the caseworker. Against our contention that that was a safe face, because sometime between June and October, they realized it didn't look so good that they hadn't followed up with that recommendation on a very significant order of this case. At the same time, at the end of 2013, the visitation workers were recommending extended visits for my client to my client and his children. Again, that same caseworker, Ms. O'Connell, and Ms. Grimm denied extending visits at that time, and then a couple months later, again, filed for this termination.
Wasn't that because they had tried the semi-supervised visitation and that seemed to create an escalation in some poor behavior with the girls?
There was testimony to that effect, although there was also testimony during the semi-supervised visits that the extension of those visits happened to overlap with the nap time for the children, and that both foster parents, the daycare provider, and one of the caseworkers testified that that had an effect on the children's behavior. The safety risks that they stated there were supervision issues during extended visits as well, but what the safety risks that they testified to in this case amount to things like potty training, communication, an incident where in the summer 2013 where it's alleged that my client was outside of his home and that he lost track of one of the children and went around a parked car in the driveway, and an incident where Ms. O'Connell testified my client left her children in a body of water. And again, that was clarified because it made it sound like he left them in the Missouri River, but it was clarified it was a kiddie pool with 2 inches of water and that it was a visitation worker with a line of sight on the children the entire time. Those were the safety risks that they testified about again and again that justified restricting the visits back to supervised. That's contained in Ms. Walpus's, the family therapist, her affidavit to restrict visits. Those were their safety risks. And there's, again, I don't believe those are the types of safety risks that should lead us to this court in front of in this court for termination of parental rights. I don't think any of it rose to a level of termination of parental rights. I think it's significant that the flow of information to the case professionals in this case was all controlled by these same caseworkers that made a determination in the summer 2013 that termination was in the best interest. For the parenting assessment, there was no collateral material. It was all provided by Ms. Grimm, according to Dr. Fairbanks' testimony. The family therapist testified that her understanding of whether or not my client was making progress in his individual parenting sessions during visits with the kids was all from Ms. Grimm, the caseworker, despite the fact that the visitation workers worked in the same agency as Chris Walpus. Working out of the same building, there was no communication between those two parties, which, again, is, I think, ridiculous given the...
Mr. Kaler, how long had these children been out of the father's home?
They were originally removed from the home in 2010 when the mother and father were together. There were allegations of domestic violence at that point. And when the original petition was November 30th of 2010.
So how do we deal with the evidence that he's not in a position some 4 years later to be able to independently parent these girls?
Well, I point out that even since the termination was filed, Chris Walpus, the family therapist, testified that she had shifted the method that she used to work with my client and his children, and that he had made drastic improvement in his ability to independently parent. And by the end of, by close to her testimony, he was able to independently parent the children approximately 90% of the time, which was much improved from what she had stated previously. I think I understand that this case far exceeds 15 out of 22 months, but I would point out that Mr. Cornell separated himself from the mother of the children, which was, again, part of the basis for the children coming into care. That was done, I believe the mother relinquished her rights in December 2012. About 3 months after that is when the state dismissed their initial motion to terminate my client's parental rights. At that time, Chris Walpus, the family therapist, had written a letter stating that terminating my client's parental rights would be to the detriment of the children. And just a few weeks after that, again, is when the caseworkers, in my estimation, switched gears and testified that they had made the decision that termination was in the best interest, even though they had just been dismissed. I point out, too, as far as Ms. Walpus's testimony, March of 2013, she writes a letter saying it would be to the detriment of the children, and I asked her on cross-examination, or the guardian ad litem asked her on cross-examination what her opinion was at the time of her testimony, and she didn't give an opinion, which I believe is a cop-out. But part of it goes to my point that the caseworkers did not seek the advice of Ms. Walpus with respect to the effect on the children. They didn't wait for the results of the parenting assessment or the follow-up to determine what was appropriate. They ignored the request of the visitation workers and their request to extend visits and went through a termination despite having access to all those professionals and being able to consult their opinion. I do believe that, especially given my client's progress with Ms. Walpas and his overall progress. But Ms. Grimm testified, even my client improved in parenting, that my client was well on his way towards making improvement and being able to reunify with his children.
So how much longer would he need?
Well, Judge, I can't put a time frame on that, but I believe that, again, if he was 90% able to independently parent his children 90% of the time, as of October, Ms. Walpas testified, again, I don't believe we're that far off, Judge. I'd ask the court to give him more time at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Amy Shuffling, Deputy County Attorney for Douglas County. Your Honor, this is a case where both appellant and his twin daughters have very special needs. Appellant has a lower IQ and has been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder and schizoid personality disorder. The children, the twins, have developmental delays. They have delayed cognition, and they have a history of significant behavioral concerns. And they have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Appellant has been given every service imaginable to be able to reunify with his children. He's had family therapy with the children's play therapist for the last year and a half. She is an individual who specializes in attachment disorders, which the girls both have. He's been giving parenting classes and parenting instruction through the Attachment and Trauma Center, a class specifically designed to assist parents who have, or caregivers who are parenting children with attachment issues. He has been given a family support worker to help him with understanding the developmental needs of the girls and to assist him with parenting skills. He's been given evaluations. He's been given therapy. But despite all of these services, he's not yet in a position to parent his children independently without supervision.
I take it you disagree with the recent comments of opposing counsel that he was getting very close to being able to do that.
I do. The testimony from Chris Walpas is that she believed he was not able to supervise and parent his children without supervision, and her concerns specifically were that he was unable to retain the parenting techniques and skills, that there was constant reteaching at her sessions with him, that he was unable to alter his parenting style to fit the very complex, very specialized needs of his girls with post-traumatic stress disorder and with attachment issues, and that he was unable to develop that continuing positive trusting relationship with his girls. So although he may have made progress in session to session, he was unable to retain that progress. While Chris Walpas testified that there was constant reteaching, that he would master a skill and then several sessions later she would have to reteach that skill all over.
What about Mr. Kaler's assertion that he was able to parent 90% of the time?
And that's what I disagree with, that maybe he was making progress in a one-hour therapeutic session.
But that percent was put out there in testimony.
But able to carry that over 24/7, Chris Walpas did testify that there were concerns with his ability to parent independently outside of therapy. I don't disagree that he was making progress in her sessions. They were an hour once a week, supervised by a trained clinician, but to be able to internalize that and to take those skills and use them outside of session, that's where the concern is. Because he did have an opportunity to have semi-supervised visitation for a period of time, and there were many concerns about his semi-supervised visitation. He was allowed semi-supervised visitation from October 2013 to March of 2014, and during that period of time, multiple providers noted concerns. The daycare, Jessica Monahan, director of ABC Child Care, testified that almost immediately after semi-supervised visitations began, the girls would come back emotionally distraught, that they would have complete and total meltdowns, cause property destruction, that they would be aggressive to staff and other students, and that once visitation went back to supervise, she was informed that visitation had changed. When she noticed the change in the girls' behaviors, and it was at that point that she was informed visitation had changed back to supervised visitation. Foster parent also noted concerns. Later in the evenings after visitation, the girls would be excessively clingy, that they would have night terrors, and those would follow visitations, that they would have aggressive behaviors, and that they would regress in terms of potty training. Visitation agency and other case managers also noted a change in the girls' behaviors, that they would be emotionally distraught and have aggressive behaviors following visitations. The children would also come back dirty and kept tired and hungry from visitations with their father when they were semi-supervised.
So we're talking about girls, little children in the ages of 2, 3, 4 that are high need, special need kinds of children, and a father who's at arguably 90% effectiveness as a parent, and your position is that we should terminate a parent's right because they don't have that last 10% met?
He's 90% effective in a therapeutic visitation with a skilled visitation specialist. That's where he's 90% effective. That doesn't include times where he has visitation with his
more independently,
where he has independent time, where he has to plan out the entire week, the entire day of these girls.
Are you familiar with In Re Interest of Nicole that the Supreme Court decided last year, in which a father's termination was reversed by the court, and there were similar issues. There was a father with somewhat lower functioning abilities, and there were issues about whether he could really control his children. They would have tantrums and fight and wet their beds. And the Supreme Court made an interesting comment about with help, he at least ought to have an opportunity to try to parent. Are you familiar with that case?
I am. I think the distinguishing factor in that case is that the case plan was not specifically tailored to the father. There was an issue where the father in that case was still with the mother, his wife, and that no one informed him that he could have a chance. He had left her. So I think our case is distinguishable from that. The problem is his father does not have support. He has his mother who had placement of the girls. It was during that time that they had a diagnosis of failure to thrive. So this is a father who doesn't have those supports necessary to assist him with parenting his daughters. And I think he's been giving every service known to our case managers to try to get him in a position where he can parent, and he's just not there yet. He has neglected to address the twins' nutritional needs. These are girls who were diagnosed failure to thrive during the course of this case while they were placed with the paternal grandmother, and they were on very structured diet, very, very regimented nutritional needs, and he did not follow the pediatrician's advice, follow the pediatrician's instructions in feeding them and having structured meal times, nor did he see their weight as an issue. He was in complete denial that there was ever anything wrong with them while they were placed with his mother. He didn't think that there was a problem at all despite the medical evidence to the contrary. And
what was the basis for the PTSD diagnosis?
The therapist testified that early exposure to domestic violence. There was an incident she testified to where one of the children was dropped in the car seat, and I'm sure living in the environment with the paternal grandmother contributed to it as well.
They were removed from the parents when they were a month old, mm-hmm. right? So the position is that they suffered PTSD when they were a month old?
According to the therapist, yes, and early exposure to trauma can affect the brain, and that is her opinion, and I'm sure living in the environment with the paternal grandmother where food was withheld or did not help that situation. However, he, during the course of this case, was unable to appropriately address the girl's nutrition and instead would fixate on the girl's weight. At some points, he would tell the foster parent that one of the girls was getting too chubby, even though she was on a special diet, to get her to go back to being an appropriate weight. And at other times, he would weigh the girls during visitations and unnecessarily fixate on the fact that they were losing weight despite evidence of the contrary, causing the girls stress. He has failed to appropriately supervise the children at visitations, even with a visitation worker around to assist him. He's been unable to maintain a structure, recognize their cues when in regards to the girls having escalating behavior problems, or when the girls are dissociating. The girls have PTSD, and the therapist noted that at times they dissociate, they go back to the trauma that they've suffered, and he was unable, despite instruction and teachings, to be able to recognize that and to appropriately deal with that. Therapist, who's a licensed independent mental health therapist and registered play therapist, has been working with the girls since January of 2013 and started working with the father in March of 2013 and noted frequently that she had to reteach, redirect the father from harmful behaviors, and that this has lasted the entire duration that she's been on the case. Children have been out of home since 2010, and the father is yet to demonstrate that he can handle them and their behaviors 24/7 in an unsupervised environment. There is no one else. He's not associated with anyone else to assist him. That is appropriate. These girls need permanency, and they need to be out of foster care. And so the state is requesting that you affirm the decision of the juvenile court and uphold the termination of his parental rights. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does Mr. Kaler have any time left? He's out. All right. Well, thank you very much. The case is submitted. And we are adjourned.